Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how will banning religious clothing discourage diversity in higher education?
Students should have the right to wear religious attire, such as veils, in colleges and universities. Leaders of the university and college union have pledged their support for the right of people of all faiths to wear the religious headdress and other religious attire appropriate to their faiths. The union argues that the move is essential to encourage participation in further and higher education among ethnic minority groups, particularly women. The move has come forward after Burnley College in Lancashire prohibited a student from wearing the veil in college. In 2009, it had also refused a student permission to enroll at the college while she was wearing a veil. In today's episode, Islam and Life will investigate, how will banning religious clothing discourage diversity in higher education?
It's an important question today. While we have European Muslims, Western Muslims, who are now citizens in European countries, in the States, in Canada, in Australia, the new visibility of Muslims is facing today trends coming from populists, coming from far-right parties, but not only. Mainstream political parties are also advocating the fact that this new visibility is just a sign that the Muslims are not integrating, so to speak, into the European societies and the European cultures. And we had this very big controversy in the 80s in France about the headscarf in schools, and then we had a discussion in other countries about the symbols of this Muslim presence, and now it's coming back to the Muslim attire in the higher education, in universities. We see today what is happening in Turkey, where this is still banned. And what was the hope is that France could be influenced by other countries. And it seems to be the other way around, that the French policy towards the visible symbols of the Muslim presence are now reaching other countries. And these are questions about the very presence of Muslims. What will be the future? How are they going to be citizens and at the same time Muslims? And do they have the right to wear whatever they want to wear as religious or practicing Muslims? Well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Mr. Nabil Shabir, a former student leader and currently a counselor from Peterborough. He is one of the youngest ethnic minority counselor in Britain. Welcome and congratulations for being one of the youngest one in the country. Let me come to this situation. You are young, you see what is happening on the ground, also involved in politics. What is the state of affairs? We thought, I was thinking for years that these discussions that we had in France will never reach, for example, the UK or other European countries. And yet this is exactly the opposite that we are seeing now other countries. So why do you, first, what is happening? How do you assess the situation?
I think what's actually happening is there's a lot of negative propaganda being put out against the Muslims, not being helped by the Muslims themselves, by certain factions. And that's something we can discuss a bit later on. But essentially what's happening is there are groups such as the EDL that have come about, other far-right groups that have come about, and
Can you say exactly what they are representing, these groups?
Yeah, well, essentially they're representing an ideology which is anti-Islamic. It's not racist. They openly say they're not racist. They're just anti-Islamic. They're against Islam in any fashion or any form that it may come in. Even liberal Islam, they don't accept that. And the rise of these groups and the amount of noise they're making is in fact influencing the layman as well in the street. And they're thinking, well, actually, maybe Islam is like that. And the general trend now seems to be that a lot of people seem to be edging towards that sort of movement of trying to forcefully integrate Muslims into society.
So, what is the relationship between targeting the clothes, the attire, the Muslim, you know, headscarf, or even beard, and on all these dimensions of this new visibility? And we have in Switzerland the minarets, and so when it comes to the right to dress whatever you want and however you want, why do you think that this is the target when you are saying, in fact, it's coming from this very negative perception of Islam in the country?
Well, I mean, you'd have to ask them exactly what their opinions are and why they are targeting this. But, you know, one of the reasons that's thrown around, especially against the veil, is the beard. But I think it's much... against the veil is security,
yes,
itself. Mm. And the problem that we have is it's not actually security. But the real issue is that people are against Islam itself. They fear Islam. They fear the amount of the spread of Islam that's occurred within Europe. You know, after 9/11, after 7/7, although people should have technically turned against Islam, there's been a more there's been a movement towards Islam, towards researching about Islam. So now these far-right groups have now taken to attacking, you know, people's attire, because it's something that you can see openly, the way a person dresses, you know, a beard. You know, these are things that are apparent signs of being a Muslim.
But this is why we have to... it's important to get the right picture, because, for example, in the United States of America, just after September 11th, 10 years ago, more than 65% of the American people were thinking that these attacks were marginal. They were not representing the Muslims. They were done by small groups and not representing Islam. Today, 10 years later, after 10 years of, you know, commitment of Muslims working within the society, reaching out, explaining Islam, now it's almost 70% of the Americans thinking that Islam might be a threat for the country. That's exactly the opposite. So the more visible you are, the more fear you spread around. And between visibility, to be vocal, to be present, there is this, the reality of the way you dress, the way you are visible within the society. So it might be that, in fact, the more you are so-called integrated within the society, the more you will have this resistance coming from the society. And this is why, you know, you use the term liberal Muslims, and some Muslims like myself, we have some concerns about this new trend of promoting an Islam without Islam. The only good Muslims are the invisible Muslims. This is what some are trying to promote from within the Muslim community, and it could be dangerous at the same time, but it's not the solution. So before coming to this discussion about the solution, if now we have to look at beyond the state of affairs, why do you think that in schools we have this problem? How do you because it happened also in France, in Turkey. It's as if schools are representing something which is a symbol of the integrative process, and the politicians are targeting clauses in schools.
I think again it comes down to pure ignorance. You know, it's against, even the most academic, the most well-educated person can be, you know, dragged into this dogma, can be dragged into having a misconception of Islam. And sometimes it boils down to a Muslim's interaction with the wider society. I mean, as Muslims, sometimes we're afraid to openly speak out. We're afraid to, when sat in front of people, to say, right, it's time for me to pray, I need to leave. And because of that, you know, you've got people in society thinking, well, if one type of Muslim is living his life like this, and they're not wearing hijab, they're not having a beard, you know, so then why isn't everyone else? And we as Muslims are giving mixed messages to the wider public. And so as a result, they're taking those messages and trying to implement them. But that doesn't give anyone the right to ban someone from wearing what they want to wear. It's an odd society that we live in. The more you take off, the more accepted you are within society. Hmm. But you start to clothe yourself more, then all of a sudden, you know, you're a threat to society. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't look at. You know, they just look at the veil as something bad. But if we looked at it purely from a point of logic, what's the problem?
But what would be your reaction to people saying that's all fine? You say it's the equal rights of people to wear whatever they want to wear. That's fine. But as we had in many countries, in Turkey, which is a Muslim majority country, but also in many European countries, starting with France, saying that's all fine, we are for equal rights. But what if, in the name of equal rights, what we are promoting is within classes inequality? Meaning, for example, that a woman wearing the headscarf will be visible and is going to be known as a Muslim. So first, it's not neutrality, it's no longer equality. And we are accepting in the name of equality something which is discrimination towards women. So what is your answer to this? Because it's a deep question. If we want to go beyond that, how would you respond to this?
I think that equality is not like you're forcing someone to wear a certain clothes, and because they wear this, they don't cease to be who they are. You know, a person still remains an individual. You can't implement some sort of super communist movement where now you influence a person's individuality. You remove who they actually are. So even if we remove the aspect of the person being a Muslim, they're still an individual. What, are you going to tell that individual, you know, to stop thinking in a certain way? You know, where do you draw the line? Hmm. And this is the major concern for me at the moment, is you start from here, but then where does it go? Do you start influencing the mosques? What's being spoken about in the mosques? Where do you draw the line?
Yes, and this is the point, because in the name of, you know, democracy and democratic processes and equality, there is freedom of speech for certain people and not for others. And when you know, for example, Geert Wilders in the Netherlands is just comparing the Quran to Mein Kampf, you say, oh, freedom of speech. But when the Muslims are saying, yes, but it's my freedom to wear whatever I want to wear, to think the way I want to think, I say, no, you are not integrated. So there are different types of freedom and double standards here. And the other thing which is important in our discussion here is the statistics and the surveys are showing that even the Muslim women in higher education, in high schools, in the colleges, they are dedicated to education and they are doing better than men and even better than their fellow students who are not religious. So it's not a question. At the end of the day, the surveys are showing that when they are involved in their religion, it doesn't mean that they are not going to be involved in their studies. Now, this is what we are facing. And we have these trends coming and reaching the UK, which is quite surprising, but also so many other countries. There is a trend here. What would be the right reaction? Do we need a reaction or do we need something which is a comprehensive policy as for the Muslim presence in Europe?
I think, for a start, we need to be very careful in the way we react. We do need to start lobbying our politicians. We do need to start lobbying
on
local
what?
Councillors, MPs, on to make them aware of this problem that is coming and say, look, you know, this is against our freedom as citizens of the United Kingdom, and you need to speak out against this. We need to take up these cases, but at the same time, we need to be proactive as well, to actually explain to people about the hijab, because we're very reactive as a community. Hmm. What we do is a problem manifests itself and then all of a sudden we all attack that problem to try and get rid of it. Hmm. But while we're attacking that, a number of other problems come about. And so we have to be quite proactive in the way. Open the mosques for people to come and see. Have mosque open days.
But, for example, in the very specific situation that we are tackling right now within universities, it's not because you are going to open the mosques that you are going to solve the problem in the campuses. If now you want to, and even if you talk to the politicians are not going to be effective in the university policies, in the college policies, because it's coming from the head teacher. Is coming from people from within. You were an activist as a student. What should be done? Could the students do something? Could the professors do something?
Yeah, I mean, we have on that level as well, the students themselves as part of the union could get their union to mobilize, get the union to protest. They themselves can make their fellow students aware within the university.
You mean about the non-Muslims?
The non-Muslims, about the hijab and what it represents and what it actually is, to really dispel some of the propaganda that's gone out there. The academics that we have within the universities, they must be very vocal, because they are there, they can influence a lot of the decisions, and they must openly be happy to call themselves a Muslim. They must not fear, you know, that they're going to lose their positions or whatever. But they've actively got to go out, extend that hand, say, yes, I'm a Muslim, but I'm against what's happening here. Because if I was faced with this situation, I would not be in the situation or this position that I am in now. Because, as you said before, you know, if they're going to be banning the hijab, a lot of people will be deprived. A lot of girls, a lot of Muslim girls will be deprived of that opportunity for higher education, because they'll think that, no, my hijab, my religion is more important to me, and they'll stray away from it. And that's not going to... that's going to influence the Muslim community, but also it will influence this country.
The problem is that many within the universities and the campuses are telling you, look, you are telling us that we need to be respectful, that we need to accept our students, our pupils to even wear the headscarf, while the European Muslim majority country, Turkey, is banning it from schools, and even going further than the French system. The French are saying it's still the high school. Beyond, you are free in university. In this country, it's not possible. What would be your answer? Because this is also something which is interesting. In the name of laïcité, or the secular state, Turkey, you still cannot go and study with your headscarf.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, you know, I think a bit of a redundant argument, because Turkey is Turkey. Turkey has its own problems. You know, when we look at the...
But it's perceived as the one of the most important is Muslim majority country with a democracy, with a democratic process.
Of course, but at the end of the day, it is not the UK. The UK has many issues with Turkey in regards to a number of its internal issues. We ourselves are an independent country. We, as the citizens of the UK, have a voice. We don't need to look out to any other country and say, well, what they're doing is right or what they're doing is wrong. No, we, as the Muslims of the UK, have a voice and we want to be heard.
So you would say, as a Muslim, that the Turkish government and the decision to ban the woman from universities there is wrong?
It's not an Islamic decision. It's a secular decision. Now, as a Muslim, for me, it's very wrong. And if I was to put on my secular hat and look at it, I'd say it's very wrong, because you're restricting someone's freedom to do what they want. So to look at a state that is essentially flawed in its ideology, it's, again, a redundant argument.
And the point is that if we want to move the perceptions here, is we are two men. And it's quite important to have more vocal women being able, within the society, within the public sphere, but also within universities, to be much more present and visible as Muslim women in the student organizations, but also as professors, as lecturers. This is missing. In the United States of America, we have more and more professors, women wearing the headscarf, being visible, and this helps to change the perception. How can we do? Because it's like as if we are having a vicious circle. We are all talking about women should be visible, and still in our education, we are still differentiating. It's still very much not a situation where there is equality. What could be done?
Well, the situation itself is I suppose, a sociological, cultural issue. When you look at various communities, there's not much push towards young people to push them in the fields of academia. You know, you want to become a doctor, you want to become a lawyer, you don't want to become an engineer, but you know, if anyone wanted to progress in the fields of academia, we as a Muslim community really don't appreciate that to be a great career. And that's a perception that we need to change within all the different communities, and really encourage the young people from a young age to say, look, you can go forward and be the academics of tomorrow, influence the decisions of tomorrow. If you're at that position, being professors, being lecturers at the university, then you can actually make a change. You know, and that's one thing that we need to do, is really encourage academia within young people from an early age so that they start getting involved. Hmm. And then also give them that ability, because I know a lot of academics who would, you know, although with a PhD behind them, but yet when faced with a non-Muslim who's questioning them about something, they'll often be on the back foot and won't be very forthcoming with any answers.
Don't want to expose themselves.
Yeah, whereas in front of Muslims, you know, they have many, many answers. And, you know, they'll present good arguments. And we need to remove that fear, that latent colonial fear that we have within ourselves, that, you know, everything that a non-Muslim says must be correct.
Mm. Thank you so much. I think it's quite important. You started this discussion by saying and referring to the very negative perception of Islam, and this could of course explain why the new visibility of Muslims is problematic, and with the headscarf and the clothes, and it comes to schools and education, higher education, where we have trends now trying to ban the specificities of the Muslim way of wearing, you know, the headscarf and to be faithful to the Islamic principles. At the same time, it's quite important here, beyond this negative perception, to have a positive visibility. And we were talking about women being much more involved within academia as students, as professors, or even just to be visible in the public sphere. It could be as politicians, it could be in the media. Just to, the more the headscarf is going to be visible, the more it's going to be normalized in the society, and to show that you can have the same rights and you are going to be exposed to the same realities and committed to your society. So it's really something that you are saying is to decolonize our minds from this fear that sometimes is the vicious circle. We react and we don't go beyond the reactions, and we don't promote this positive presence and with this visibility. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programmes. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programmes, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Mr. Nabil Shabir. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.